Well, it's great to have you with us this morning. My name's Kurt Walters, and I'm the lead pastor here at Crosspoint. And, you know, as PJ said earlier, there's a lot of places you could be today. And so we consider it a privilege that you join us today on this beautiful fall morning. Now, we're in this thing called a journey right now, and it's called the Free Journey. And we've got free stuff for you. If you do not own one of these books, these orange books, there's some in the back of the tables, and we invite you to grab one of these when you leave today. And but it's more than just free stuff. It's talking about how we are on this journey toward becoming free from the things that tie us down. And so we're in week five today of a six-week series. And so if this is your first time with us, welcome. We're glad that you've chosen to join us. You're going to be able to just kind of sync right up with where we're at. Hopefully some things can connect with where you are in your life as we continue this morning. Now, you know, as we think about, let me back up. You know, real quick before we go there, PJ mentioned you need a weekly. And inside your weekly, take that out. There's a connection card that looks like this. And it's one of the things that we do every week. And so if you want to take that out, there's a pen on your chair next to you somewhere. Grab that. If you're a partner or regular attender, just go ahead and start filling this out. All we need if you're a partner or regular attender is your name and any information that's changed so we can keep our database up to date. And if you're a guest today, we would welcome you filling this out as well. We would love for you to share as much information as you're comfortable passing on to us. And we're always interested in knowing if it's your first time with us, second time with us. And at the bottom, there's a question that asks how you heard about Crosspoint, and that's always intriguing to us to find out how people are hearing about this community. And so as you're filling that out, a couple things I want to bring you up to speed on. You know, we're partnering or collaborating with a couple other churches on the north side of Indy in this free journey. In fact, there are other churches right now that are going through some of the same things we're going through in week number five. And one of the experiences we're collaborating on is known as the prayer experience. And this is an experience that's going on. It began last Friday. It goes through this week from today through next Sunday. And there's dates and times in your weekly. And this is something we're just encouraging everybody to take an hour out of your week, whether it's before work, after work, during your lunch hour. You might, if you're in a free group, you might go with your group. You can go individually on your own. But take an hour and go to this prayer experience. And, you know, it's not this kind of real high churchy kind of thing. If you're a little worried about what it's going to be, it's going to be very meaningful for you. You're going to get an MP3 player. You're going to have an audio experience that's going to kind of guide you through thinking through certain prompts and then going to different stations and doing different, having different experiences. And it's just a significant part of this journey that we're on. And I guarantee you, if you engage in this, that it will help you take one of those steps to that next place. And so there's a map on a card inside your weekly that tells you where it is. It's at Northview Church over in Carmel at 131st and Hazeldale Parkway. And we just encourage you to find an hour in the next week to do that. Also, at the end of this series, we're going to be kind of having a celebration week on October 31st. We're just going to kind of celebrate what God's been doing, that God has been freeing many people through this journey from things that have just been preventing us from being all that God designed our lives to be. And as a part of that day, we're going to have a baptism celebration. And, you know, baptism is something that's literally just a symbol. It's a symbol that something significant has taken place in our life, that we've entered into a relationship with Christ, and He has began to free us. And so if you've entered into a relationship with Christ and never been water baptized, then I want to encourage you to consider this. You know, there's nothing mystical about baptism. It's simply a symbolic expression of something very personal that's taken place in your life and saying, hey, I've entered into a relationship with Christ and I've kind of been freed of all this trash. We have a big tub of water in here and we have a bunch of people that are going to go into that water and they're going to come up and it's going to be this symbol of how they've kind of been cleansed. They've left all their garbage behind as God has freed them or is in the process of freeing them from the things that have tied them down. It's one of those very definitive moments that we remember that I took a significant step in my journey toward freedom. And so if you're interested in that, on the back of your connection card, you can mark that, and we'll send you more information on that. Now, today, we're gonna take kind of a turn today. We're going in a new direction from where we've been over the last 4 weeks. And today, we're going to be talking about how in order to maintain our freedom, we have to fight for our freedom. In fact, we must fight to maintain our freedom, and this often happens in the context of community. Some of us have been experiencing that as we've been in a free journey group. We've been gathering every week with a small group of people, and we realize this is a significant part of the journey of helping ourselves get free, and it often happens in the context of community. And just as a side note, it has been a great week when we talk about becoming free in community. Anybody watch the Chilean miner rescue earlier this week? It was all over CNN and the news networks. I mean, just cool images coming up from this major picture what was once a tragedy 60 days ago, 65 days ago, and has turned into just this great moment in humankind all around the world. I mean, people were cheering for this thing. And you know, what was cool about this is you talk about it taking a community to champion someone's freedom. One of the most significant moments, if you watch some of the news coverage, for me, was when the Minister of Mining in Chile, when they finally established the communication with the men that were, a half mile underground in this mine, when they were able to communicate with them, and he said to them, "Our entire country has been working upon your rescue." I mean, how cool is that to be on the other end thinking, man, there's a community up at ground level, and everyone is fighting for our freedom. Everyone's doing whatever it takes in order for us to be elevated out of this place, out of this tragedy, and to once again be reunited with our families and to be able to live again. I mean, just a powerful, powerful moment in human history as we watched that transpire over the last week. Cool, cool stuff. So, you know, we've been using a common metaphor each week to kind of help us make this visual connect with what's going on, what we're talking about this week. We've used airplanes, we've used kites, we've used butterflies, we've had a lot of imagery with flying because there's something about soaring, there's something about going through the air that kind of gives us a good image. And today I want to give us a bit of a different image, and we've got a bird in a cage today. This is a real live bird named Pretty Boy. Thank you, John. And you know, and we're going to talk about what it means to be caged. What, you know, because when we think about freedom, we think about being free, we think of flying. But you know, there are many things in our experience, in our lives, that cause us to become caged. And we've been going through some of these. If you've been tracking through your guide, and if you haven't, if you just got this for the first time today, you might spend some time going through this week. It's a big tool of self-awareness, helping you see where your life is maybe bound, where maybe you are not living to the fullness of what God created you to be. And for many of us, we've been realizing that we're caged. And in fact, there's many common cages. We've identified four major ones. And some of the things we're going to be looking at is how, you know, we do not have to be stuck in these common cages. You know, maybe you're struggling with the cage of rejection. Maybe you've always felt unaccepted. You've always felt like, you know, that's just the general plight. God, why would God accept me? How could God forgive me? Why would people want to be a part of my life? I mean, if you struggle with questions like that, then you probably have this cage of rejection that you are stuck in. You know, there's this cage of pride and religion. That's one that I've realized I have remnants of religion in my life. I have things that I think if I perform better, God's going to be happier with me. And so I at times get stuck in this cage of religion. You know, some of us have been realizing we're in this cage of fear, and we have this constant ongoing sense that, man, bad things are going to happen. And so, you know, so we were prevented from living because we're afraid of what might take place. And so we're in this cage where fear is just holding us in. Others of us, we've realized we're in this cage of anger and bitterness, and we just realize that maybe there's some painful, painful things, maybe things that never should have happened in our life that have happened, and we've never really dealt with them, and so we're stuck in this cage, and it's just holding us down. And so these are some of the things, these are some of the common things we've been identifying that maybe prevent us from being free. Now, last week, just a real quick recap, we took a look at four phases that we go through when we begin to experience freedom. And the first was known as the blahs. And the blahs is just, you know, there comes a point in life where we realize, man, life is just mundane. I'm going through the motions. I'm going to work every day. I work. I go home. I sleep. I get up. I eat. I work. I go home. I sleep. And I'm just in this routine, this mundane routine, kind of the status quo where I'm not doing anything to move my life forward. I'm not attaching myself to anything that maybe is going to take me to a new place. And I've just kind of given into the reality that this is going to be my life. It is what it is. And when we fall into that, we realize we're in the blah stage. We're in blah land. We're like, God, isn't there more to life than this? Didn't you create me for more than just going to work and sleeping and eating and going and doing it all again? And we begin to realize that maybe I need to break from this status quo place, and I need to have this definitive break where I begin to go in a new direction. And so as we go to that place, we realize the next phase is known as the break. It's where we make this definitive move away from the blahs, away from the status quo life, and we begin to make this definitive move towards something new, a new kind of reality for ourselves. And in many cases, this requires us tethering ourselves, attaching ourselves to a freedom giver, in this case, Christ, who champions our freedom, who helps us maybe do things in our life, break free from things that we can't break free from ourselves. And when we make the break, we begin to realize that we're in this awkward place, and eventually the blues begin to set in. And oftentimes we think, man, I just made the break. The hardest work is done. I can now, everything's downhill from here. But we realize, no, it's not downhill. The blues stage is actually difficult. It's a hard stage. Sometimes it's a lengthy stage. We've exited the blahs. We've made a definitive break from the mundane, from the things that are tying us down. And we say, man, everything's going to be good now. And we begin to realize that the blues are hard. When we're in the blues land, you know, we're dealing with things. We knew what it was like to be in the cage, and now we're in awkward land. We're in this place where, you know, we haven't built up new muscle fiber yet, and so we're operating in a new place, in environments, in ways that maybe we've never operated in before. Maybe we've always lived in a private, sheltered life, never let anyone into our lives, and now we're saying, yeah, I'm going to break free from that. I'm going to let somebody into my life, but you don't know how to operate with somebody who really wants to become a part of your inner circle because you've never done it before, and it's hard, and it's stretching you, and you're like, man, sometimes I just rather go back to slavery and go back to the blahs because at least I know what it was like. And eventually, though, we go through the blues. As we endure through the blues, we realize this is shaping us for the fullness known as the blessing of all that God has in store for us. And so what I've realized is, as we were going through this last week, I realized, you know, that I'm in the blues right now. I mean, I've made some definitive breaks in my life from some performance addiction, some things that I'm really working on right now of becoming free in. And yet I've realized that I haven't built up that new muscle fiber. I'm not fully operating in the blessing yet. And so one of the things that has been a significant part of me continuing through the blues, continuing to move forward, are friends that are a part of my life, of having people in my life who champion my freedom. And I realized last week, as some of you marked on your cards the stages that you were in, that about 90% of this community is in the blues phase. Many of us, we've made some definitive break, and yet we're in that blues phase where we're enduring some of the hard changes, the awkwardness of making some change in our life that help us get to that next new place. And we realize that the significant thing that's going to help us do that is allowing people, allowing others who are fighting for our freedom to come in and be a part of our lives. And so I want us to take a look at this today. I want us to take a look at what it means for us to allow others to fight for our freedom, what it means for us to not only to go after freedom, but to go after freedom for others, to become a part of other people's lives, helping them get free. And so I want you to take a look at a guy in this video, a guy by the name of Keith, and watch his story and how he began to experience freedom through watching others. Take a look at the screen.
I really learned that when you do something well, you get attention. People tell you that. It really became a performance thing for me. I do well in sports, do well in school. My spiritual walk was just like anything else, that, you know, you study a book so you can pass a test, that I believe in God. Jesus was my Savior. I wanted to do the best I could. And so when I was supposed to do things, I would do them obediently, expecting, okay, now I've won his approval. And I remember studying the Bible, that I loved it. It was great. And I knew those things as true, but I knew them just like it was a biology book. I'd love to say there was a moment, but I think really being around other people who were free, other people who, you know what, they'd fail and it was okay. They didn't have to do things perfectly. It's really a sense of freedom that I could see in other people's lives and a peace that they had that I wanted, but it wasn't until I stopped trying to do things right, and I started to grow my relationship with God. I had a God not only that knew me, but wanted to know me, that it was a relationship. And I think studying it as facts versus understanding in my heart that God loves me, and he wants communion with me, and he wants me to be in community with other people, that I had to very clearly tell myself, it's okay if you're not the best. God not only loves me, but he wants to be in every part of my life. And allowing him in really shone light on those places that I didn't even know were secret and held in dark, that I didn't need to be responsible for him when I gave him over to God. That's when I started to see freedom. I started to have that peace that seemed to be a little elusive sometimes. To me, freedom is peace. Freedom is that moment I think about when you were a little kid and you got done with the last day of school and you went, ha, like it was over, it was done, you had that 3 months ahead. But I believe, and I know, that God wants that in every day, every part of your life.
God, I'm praying right now that, you know, as we look at these images, as we think about our freedom, God, that you would help us to see that you are a God who constantly champions our freedom. Help us to see that you call us to it, and that we can be a part of helping others experience this as well. And so, God, help us to see how we are agents of this, how you have called us when you set us free to be freedom fighters for others. And so God, help me to articulate this today. Help us to just get a grasp on what it means for us to do that for those in our lives. I pray these things according to your name and character. Amen. You know, that's a great song by the Beatles. I don't know how familiar you are with that song, but Paul McCartney said the song Blackbird was actually inspired as he watched the civil rights movement here in the United States back in the 60s. In fact, he was watching a black woman, and in English culture, in British culture, bird is actually a slang word for woman. So Blackbird is actually black woman, and it was actually a song that was inspired as he watched other people, other individuals in our country here get free. And it's amazing how we can watch somebody on their journey get free, and it inspires in us how that might be able to happen in our lives as well. And so I want to talk about that today. I want us to talk about what that looks like for us. You know, you've probably heard the phrase before, hurt people hurt people. Have you ever heard that? Have you ever experienced that before when maybe somebody's hurt you and you're like, man, you know, that person is always hurting somebody, and it's because they have a lot of hurt in their own lives, because hurt people in return hurt others. Well, the positive side of that statement is that free people free people. And so, there's kind of this life cycle of freedom, and we're going to be talking similar to what we just saw in that video with Keith, how he was talking about how he watched his friend Josh and things just began to break off of his life. He began to experience freedom as he saw someone else increasingly become free. And so I want us to look at a story today, and we find this in this authorized biography of Jesus' life written by his friend John, and it's one of the stories that's kind of near the end of his life, near the end of his time here on earth. And I want to kind of set the context for this because it kind of gives us a picture of how Jesus championed others' freedom, how Jesus was a freedom fighter, and not only was a freedom fighter, but he was actually wanting to help others see that they can instill courage to others and help them get free. And so in this story that we're going to look at here in John chapter 20, I want to kind of set the scene for us real quickly, because at this particular time in Jesus' life and the disciples' life, it was like they were in this cage. They were caged by fear. In fact, we regularly see them at this point in their journey, at this point in their lives together. They're gathering in a room, they're closing the doors, they're locking the doors because they're afraid of what might happen to them. For you see, they had saw this Jesus. They'd been living with Jesus for 3 years. He'd been investing them into them. He's been pouring his life into them. He's been discipling them. He's been leading them. And they thought he was the one. They said, man, this is the one. Jesus is the one who's come, and he's come to break these chains. He's come to free Israel from this tyranny that we're under in Rome. He's come to literally and physically and emotionally and spiritually in every aspect of the word. He's come to rescue us and to free us and to change everything. And so that's what they saw. And then all of a sudden, they saw him in these last 7 days. They saw all of these hopes, all of these dreams just totally crumble. In fact, they saw Jesus go from this triumphal entry into Jerusalem on Palm Sunday, where people are waving palm branches and they're cheering, they're screaming, they're celebrating. They're saying, hey, here's the one, here's the Savior. This Jesus has come to rescue us. He's coming to establish a new reign, a new kingdom, to 7 days later, him dying a shameful, scornful death, a death like a criminal on the cross. And so their hope was just diminished. I mean, they lost all hope, and they said, Rome has won again. We thought that a new kingdom was coming to be established, and yet Rome just defeated this one, this Messiah, this rescuer. And so this was the scene that was taking place 3 days later. Jesus had been dead for 3 days, and his friends, these 10, they were afraid. I mean, they saw what the authorities did to Jesus, and so they're locking themselves in a room. They're literally caged by fear. They're thinking, man, if this is what the authorities did to Jesus, then maybe we're going to experience the same fate. And so in that place, literally, where they're caged into this room, locked into this room, Jesus actually shows up, and his first word to them is peace. And this word wasn't just a blessing, but it was literally a promise that he was giving to them. He was saying, I want you to have peace, because how do you combat fear? You combat it with peace. And so here's what it says in John 20, verse 21. It says, Jesus shows up with them, and he says, peace be with you. As the Father has sent me, I am sending you. And with that, he breathed into them, and he said, receive the Holy Spirit. If you forgive anyone his sins, they are forgiven. If you do not forgive them, they are not forgiven. So imagine this scene with me for just a second. You know, these 10 guys, they just saw Jesus die. I mean, 3 days later, they saw him hanging on a cross. They saw his head fall. They saw this sword go into his side, and water and blood separate as it poured out of his body. They saw his body go limp on this cross. All hope was gone. And all of a sudden, 3 days later, this guy's walking into this room, and his first words to them are peace. because he realized they're caged by fear. And the way that he combats this fear, he says, peace, I want peace to be with you. And this wasn't just a blessing, it was literally a promise. He was reinstilling hope. He was saying, hey, there's something going on here, and I want you to be encouraged. I want you to realize, I want to put something into you. I want to put courage into you, because you in turn are going to go out into this community and put courage into others as they see that you can be free. Because you see, this is what Jesus is doing here. He's giving his friends the authority to set people free. So the first thing we see in this freedom-fighting movement that Jesus is doing right here is we see that he frees us so we in turn can put courage into others. And so in part, one of the reasons that he sets us free is so we can help others get free. And when we do this, this amazing thing happens. We begin to realize that as we help others get free, we actually become more free ourselves. I don't know if the name Roger Bannister rings a bell with anybody. Anybody familiar with the name Roger Bannister? A couple of us. Roger Bannister, in fact, he was featured back on Sports Illustrated in 1999 in a commemorative issue. And Roger Bannister was a neuroscientist, but before he was a neuroscientist, he was this guy who was known best for being the guy who broke the four-minute mile. He broke the cage of the four-minute mile. Now, no human being had ever done that at this point in time, back in the 50s. In fact, it was even wondered if it was impossible. There were people that said it is humanly impossible for a human being to run fast enough to break a mile distance in less than 4 minutes. And so people just kind of realize it's one of the human limitations that we have. And Roger Bannister, he wouldn't agree with that. In fact, he got in his mind that he could break this thing. And so he began to train more and more, and he began to engage in more races. In fact, he participated in the 1952 Olympics, and he kind of believed that that's where it was going to happen. And he came up just a few seconds short of breaking that cage of the four-minute mile. And what he began to realize is that he could not do this on his own. And so he realized that he needed a community to help him do this. He needed people around him to help him break out of this cage of a four-minute mile. And so what he began to do is he began to develop some relationships with some guys, and he invited them to help him, help be his community. And so in a race in 1954, these two friends of his became rabbits for him. And so they all took off out of the starting blocks, and one of his friends took off at a dead sprint that he was not going to be able to maintain for a full mile, but he would be able to maintain it for half a mile. So he ran ahead of the pack, ahead of the group, at a faster pace for two laps to kind of be a rabbit in front of Roger Bannister so that he would have something to chase. And when those two laps were over and that rabbit began to kind of tucker out, another friend who had been jogging for the first two laps began to pick up a dead sprint to be another rabbit for the second two laps. And it was during that race that Roger Bannister broke out of the cage of the four-minute mile. He broke free and came in just under 4 minutes because Roger Bannister realized that he needed a community in order to break free through this banister, or through this cage. And so what's more interesting than that, though, is it was only 3 years later before 16 other individuals had actually broken the 4 minute mile as well. I mean, it's fascinating. And we see this time and time again. We see when someone breaks through a barrier, then before long, what was once thought impossible, others are doing it one after another. In fact, we used to have a guy that attended Crosspoint here that was a 4 minute mile breaker. In fact, I learned that this morning when I was talking out at the coffee bar. Roosevelt Jackson was someone who raced under a 4 minute mile. And so time and time again, since it was done once, others get the picture. Now you have to ask yourself, did the DNA of runners change? I mean, is there something different going on in the DNA that causes, once it's done, that we just kind of adapt ourselves and we're physically able to do that at a different level? No, that's not what takes place. What happens is once someone sets the example, then the others see that it is now possible. And this is what we see with freedom. In fact, this is one of the significant things that happens when Jesus rises from the grave, when his friends experience him 3 days later. It wasn't just that he came to set us free, but he sets an example for them. He says, you know, you do not have to be caged by fear or by rejection or caged by you know, insecurities of being unaccepted or by religion or by pride. He said, you don't have to let these things tie you down anymore. I am here to show you, to set an example for you that you can be set free. In fact, here's how one writer put it, Dr. N.T. Wright. He said, the new creation is not just whistling in the dark. It's not a kind of social Pelagianism. He says, we're trying to improve things by pulling ourselves up by our own bootstraps. Because Jesus is raised from the dead, God's new world has begun. We are not only the beneficiaries of a new creation, we are the agents of it. And he says, not only did Jesus come to set you free, but he called you now to be a freedom fire and help others do the same. And so what we see is that when we live in freedom, this freedom happens in communion. When we live in freedom, we show others, we're an agent, and we show others what it looks like when they become free. Another way this happens, another way we see this happen in the story here in the scriptures when Jesus reveals himself back to his friends is when we share our scars. Now, this is a unique picture right here because, you know, one of the things that's fascinating about how Jesus reveals himself to his friends after he rose from the dead is actually in how he decides to show up. Because, you know, he doesn't show up with a perfect body. He doesn't show up fully restored with his skin, you know, perfect complexion. He doesn't show up with all of the beatings, the whippings, the scars, the wounds on his back gone. He shows up with scars on his body. And there's something significant about this. In fact, this is where there's a clear delineation between what we see in the films, what we see in Hollywood's version of the story and what we actually see in the Bible. Because, you know, in Hollywood's version of the story, we see this Jesus return. It's got this spiritual moment. He's got this halo over his head. And there's like this music singing, hallelujah. And, you know, it's like he comes back and everything about this, you know, it's like he turns Swedish all of a sudden. He has naturally good hair, a naturally good complexion. All of his skin is fair toned and he has no blemishes. And this isn't what we see in the Bible. In fact, when we look at this in the scriptures, what it says is that he shows back up with scars on his hands, with scars on his back, with scars on his side, and there's something significant in this. Why? Because scars signal something. Scars signal something that you and I want when we're pursuing freedom. Scars signal that this is just a normal, natural process in our journey toward freedom, and part of that is a healing process. And when we see scars, we see that there's evidence that someone was once wounded and now they're being healed. And you know, sometimes it's hard to share our scars, isn't it? When we think about it, sometimes we cover them up. I have a few scars on my body, and I cover those up. People ask about them every now and then, and sometimes they don't want to talk to them. It's hard to talk about our scars, and yet that's what Jesus does right here. I don't know if you've seen the story of Josh Hamilton this week. If that name sounds familiar with you, Josh Hamilton plays for the Texas Rangers, and the Rangers clinched the AL divisional title, divisional series earlier this week. And there's a really unique story that, again, is kind of a story of championing freedom that came out of the Rangers doing that this week. In fact, back in September when the Rangers clinched their division and clinched their playoff berth, basically, you know, of course, there's champagne on the rocks, there was beer in the clubhouse, and Josh Hamilton has this incredible addiction to alcohol and narcotics. In fact, he's violated the substance abuse policy of Major League Baseball so many times that he's on a no-tolerance plan, which means that if he has another violation, then he's out of baseball for a while. And so back in January, he had a major falling back. He'd been sober for 3 years, and then he went out with his friends for one night, and he said, all I had was one beer. And one beer led to five, and five beers led to 12. And before long, he's in some bar in Tempe, Arizona, and there's these public pictures of him, you know, partying up with a bunch of women that aren't his wife, licking whipped cream off these women's breasts that aren't his wife. And it hit this scandalous zone all over the country. And Major League Baseball looked into this, and they said, Josh, one more time, and you're out. And so when his team clinched their division back in September, he chose to go around his clubhouse. When his team was in partying with champagne and beer, he went into a side office, took a shower, got his clothes on, and he went back out into the stands, and he talked to a bunch of kids who were there with their church group. Because he said, man, there's some scars in my life. There's some things in my life. There's some things that have gone on that if I don't let the people around me know why I'm doing something different, then they're not going to understand. Well, this past week, it came around to him because it was really cool. If you saw some of the pictures, in fact, here's one right now. When the Rangers clinched the divisional series this week, they had what was called the ginger ale celebration. His teammates were like, man, this guy's our MVP. It's not right that he's not here partying with us. So they said, for the first part of our celebration, we're going to have non-alcoholic ginger ale as a way of saying, Josh, we want to champion your freedom. We want to get into your cage. We want to get into your life. And we want to celebrate with you this thing you're doing because we realize there's certain things that you've got to stay away from. In fact, here's what he was quoted as saying. He said, it was the coolest thing for my teammates to understand why I can't be a part of the celebration, he said. For them to adapt it for me to be a part of it says a lot about my teammates. You see, they realize that, man, he's on a freedom-fighting mission, and they have to be in his cage fighting for his freedom, helping him stay free from this addiction that's got a grip on his life. And part of the way that they can do that is when he shares, hey, there's been some rough stuff in my life. He shares his scars and reveals that he's in a process of healing. Now, during this journey, You know, some of us, we've been identifying how we're not free. In fact, if you've been going through this orange guide, it's been kicking your butt at times. I mean, it's been revealing some things to you of places in your life where you've maybe just began to believe in a lie that's preventing you from being all that God designed you to be. And so one of the things we want you to do this morning, when you came in, you received a Sharpie. It looks like this. Go ahead and take that out. And in your weekly, you received a card like this. We've got all kinds of things you're pulling out of your weekly today. On this card, I want you to do something right now. I want you, if you've been tracking on this journey with us, or if you've not, and you just say, you know, there's something in my life that maybe I've bought into that is preventing me from being free. If you've been going through the guide, it might be that thing you wrote down on page 19. But on the side of this card that says, I choose not to believe, I want you to write whatever that belief is that you've bought into. What's that thing? And I'm not looking for a paragraph here. I'm looking for like a sentence, a statement, a few words, not a novel, all right? Nobody's interested in a novel on this. You don't have to put your name on this. You just write it out. Write it kind of big. That's why we gave you a Sharpie, so you can see it. And then on the back side, after you write that, I want you to write down, instead, I choose to agree with God and believe. What's the new belief you're going after, right? What's the new thing you've identified? You're saying, I'm going after this to help me break free from this thing that's been holding me down. And as you're writing, as you're identifying what this thing is and writing this, I don't want you to put your name on it. This is supposed to be anonymous. In fact, don't look at your neighbors even. All right, this is kind of a private thing. So go ahead and start writing. And as you're writing, I want you to take a look at the screens and listen to this story of how another individual, a guy by the name of Brett, saw and helped someone else get free by watching someone else get free themselves. Take a look.
I'd say the first time I really recognized that I wasn't living in freedom is about 4 years ago. I was just having some quiet time with God, a 9-hour car drive and no radio, just me and God chilling out. And it was about halfway through the drive, he just brought to my memory something that had happened when I was in the sixth grade. My parents pull me out back and my dad starts talking to me. And my dad's an engineer, so he pulls, you know, has to do a diagram for everything. And he pulls out a piece of paper and he puts it, a pen on it. And he starts talking about how he and my mom are starting to have different goals in life. And, you know, they're just starting to split up. And he actually put a point and then like drew two arrows going off in different directions. When I'm driving in the car, you know, God revealed to me, he goes, you know that diagram that your dad drew? How there was that little dot and then the arrows going off in different directions. You're living in that spot. You are fearful and anxious that at any point you're going to do something and any relationship you have, it's just going to split. So that was causing me just great stress, great anxiety. Anytime with my then girlfriend, now wife, anytime something, any sort of conflict arose, I was just really anxious, really worried. I was just super quick to try and resolve it. I definitely saw how not only was fear present and kind of how I was working in relationships, but also it translated in a different form, but with kind of the same results in like professional settings where I was uneasy, anxious, stressed out, you know. But then I was just using words like that, like, ah, I'm just stressed. I'm just a little nervous. I'm just a little anxious. Whatever. So, you know, that's what everyone is. I think the first time I really recognized that it wasn't normal or it wasn't how I was supposed to be living was actually when I was reading the Bible and I was reading in 2 Timothy and it said how, for you weren't given a spirit of fear or a spirit of timidity, but a spirit of power, love, and self-discipline. And it just, I feel like when I read that, wait a minute, like fear isn't normal. I wasn't given this from God. I'm supposed to have power, love, and self-discipline. Fear is not from him. I'd say, you know, community has just been extremely important, having a group of guys that I can count on that are willing to listen to me. And then another aspect of community has just been now I am able to build into others. Working with teenage guys, I can start to see, hey, they're starting to go down some paths or they're already down a path where I was. And anytime they're talking now and they say, yeah, I'm a little worried about this, or they say worry, anxious, stressed, scared, fear, like I think God just like gives me a little like zap and I recognize like, okay, that guy's got a little fear thing going on. It's up to me to, you know, encourage him and help him recognize that that's not what God has for him. To me, freedom is living fearlessly and just doing what God calls you to do.
So you know what? One of the things we see from Brett's story is that freedom happens when we're willing to get into the cage with other people in their lives. I mean, this is one of the significant things that we have to grasp. I mean, if we're gonna be not just free ourselves, but we're gonna fight for someone else's freedom, we have to be willing to get into the cage with other people in their lives. I'm gonna be honest with you, it gets messy when you get in the cage with other people. When you get into the cage, I mean, there's all kinds of crap in the cage. There's all kinds of baggage in the cage. There's all kinds of things that, you know, are gonna take your time when you get into the cage. But this is what it means to be a freedom fighter and to champion someone else's freedom. And this is one of the things that we see Jesus do in this authorized autobiography or biography of his life. In fact, one of Jesus's friends wasn't there when he revealed himself to the other 10. And, you know, we don't know why he wasn't there. We don't know where he was, what he was doing. But as a result, when the 10 other guys went and found this friend, they're like, "Hey, have you seen that Jesus is alive again? I mean, he was dead 3 days ago, and he's alive." And this guy was like, "You're kidding. There's no way. I don't believe it. Unless I can put my hands in his fingers where those nails went through, I won't believe it." And this guy's name was Thomas, and he was actually caged in this cage of doubt. He was dealing with doubt. And if you've ever heard the phrase "doubting Thomas," you ever said that phrase before? This is actually where it comes from, because the guy's name was Thomas, and so he was in this cage, and he was in a place of doubt. He's like, "There's no way. I saw with my own eyes Jesus die. There's no way he's alive." Take a look at what transpires here in John chapter 20, verse 24. It says, "Now Thomas, called Didymus, one of the 12, was not with the disciples when Jesus came. See, the other disciples told him, 'We have seen the Lord.' But he said to them, 'Unless I see the nail marks in his hands, and I put my finger where the nails were, and put my hand in his side, I will not believe it.' A week later, the disciples were in the house again, and Thomas was with them. And though the doors were locked, Jesus came, and he stood among them, and he said, 'Peace be with you.' And then he said to Thomas, 'Put your finger here, see my hands. Reach out your hand and put it into my side. Stop doubting and believe.' And Thomas said to him, 'My Lord and my God.'" Those words right there at the end, "My Lord and my God." This is evidence that in that moment, Thomas's cage was opened. I mean, Jesus entered into Thomas's cage. He's like, "Thomas, whatever it takes, whatever it's going to take to help you not doubt anymore, whatever it's going to take, if you need to put your fingers in my fingers, then I'm going to do that." You know what's fascinating right here is how Jesus accommodates Thomas. Have you ever noticed that? Have you ever wondered and realized how many times Jesus accommodates you? You know, so many times we think, man, God is rigid. God never accommodates me. It's his way or the highway. But let me just give you a clue in right here. You know, God accommodates us all the time. In fact, you know, I was telling PJ, we're going to do a series on this sometime about how God accommodates us, because we see time and time again throughout the scriptures how God adjusts what his plan is to fit where you are in your life. In fact, if we go all the way back to the beginning, we've been spending a lot of time in Genesis, back when Adam and Eve were in the garden. If you look at when they were there, you know, God said, "Hey, I want you to be free. I want you to do whatever you want. You're free to eat from any tree, from any animal. You're able to name things, whatever you want to name them. The only thing I ask is don't eat the fruit from this one tree." And of course, Adam and Eve were intrigued by that. They went and took the fruit from that one tree. And after they did that, everything was on their downline. And so one of the things was on their downline is all of a sudden they realized they were naked, right? And so they went and grabbed like fig leaves and began to cover themselves up. That's where the fruit of the loom came from, by the way. If you ever wondered where that name came from. You know, they began to cover themselves up with fig leaves. And God was like, "Guys, that's not going to work very well. It's hard to fold those things. It's hard to wash them. You know, they get stiff sometimes. It's scratchy a bit down in those areas when you cover yourself with fig leaves." He's like, "I'm going to accommodate you. This wasn't a part of my original plan, but I'm going to go out and I'm going to kill one of my creations. I'm going to kill an animal. I'm going to take the hide off of it. I'm going to give it to you so you can have a hide to keep yourselves warm." And so one of the things we see is that God accommodates, because God is always accommodating us. This is just what God does. And so right here, we see God accommodating Thomas. We see God in the form of Jesus. He's going to Thomas, and it would have been easy for Jesus to say, what do you mean? You literally need to touch me? Isn't hearing it from your 10 friends enough? I mean, you spent 3 years with these guys. You spent 3 years listening and living with these guys, and they told you I'm alive. If that's not enough for you, then tough. You're going to figure it out yourself. But no, what does he do? He says, "Thomas, come here." He gets right down. He said, if you need to put your finger literally through the holes in my hand, then do so. If you need to put your hand in my side where the spear went through, then do so. Whatever it takes, I'm going to get in your cage of doubt. And whatever it takes, I'm going to get in there. I'm going to help you see that I'm for real. Because freedom comes when we're willing to get into the cage with people who are struggling. As we think about this, You know, one of the most significant changes that has come in my life, some of the most significant moments that I've been through personally in my journey toward freedom, not just over the last few weeks, but over the last 20 years, have come with my friends. They've come when people were willing to get into the cage of my life. And in fact, one of my friends today, he said, you know, Kurt, when I first met you, you were like a tough nut that couldn't be cracked. He's like, and for that first year, man, I was just chipping away. I just kept trying to put a little more pressure on, until eventually that shell was willing to open up a little bit. And, you know, I thank God for that friend every day, because that friend was willing to get in the cage with me. He was willing to get in there and kind of ruffle my feathers a bit. And he was willing to put gentle pressure on me until he got through the outer shell, all the callousness that had built up where I wouldn't allow anyone to get into my life. And some of the most significant changes that have ever happened in my life, some of the things that when I've got out of some of the addictions I've had in my life, when I've gone through difficult seasons of my life, they've always happened in the context of friends in community. In fact, in the last few weeks, I've spent a number of hours with some of my friends. You know, me getting into their cages and kind of rattling some things and helping them take some steps forward, saying, hey, how can I be there for you? What can I do for you? What can I do to walk alongside you as you take these steps forward? And, you know, I've had some of my friends get into my cage and that have processed through with me some of the things that I'm struggling with, some of the things that I'm realizing I'm still in bondage to, some of the performance things that I still struggle with on being accepted by God. My friends have gotten in my cage and they've walked alongside with me. You see, we can't be about someone else's freedom until we're willing to get in the cage. And so one of the things I want to do as we kind of wrap this up is I want to kind of give us a few practical examples. What does it look like for us to get in this cage? What does it look like if there's somebody in our life that maybe just needs somebody to come alongside them and champion their freedom? You know, maybe there's somebody that's close to you that struggles with rejection, that they feel that sense of being unaccepted. How do I break that barrier? Because most likely, somebody's dealing with rejection. They have this wall that they've put up and you've never broke through it. It's like that nut that's not yet been cracked. And so as much as you try, you know, there's nobody in that inner circle of their lives. You're like, man, if somebody can just break through and get into that inner circle of their life, they might be able to get free. Well, here's what you can do. You can get into that cage and you can just withstand the pressure as they continue to push you away. As you get into the cage with them, they're going to be pressing. As you begin to probe, as you begin to gently kind of try to crack that shell, as you kind of say, hey, I'm going to be here. What can I do for you? How can I come alongside of you? How can I show you that, you know, you don't have to go through this alone? Then you're just going to gently be cracking at that shell and you're going to have to withstand the pressure because their natural tendency is going to be to push you away. And you're going to have to just continue to be persistent and continue to gently and in an intentional way get into that shell. That's one of the things that have happened for me. You know, if you have somebody in your life that struggles with bitterness or anger, and every time they talk, you just see how deep the roots go. I mean, you're like, man, there's something that's happened in their life that just causes them to have deep, deep anger. They're judgmental of other people. They're judgmental of you at times. They can lash out at you. You know, one of the things you can do when you get into that cage, and again, they're going to kind of push away on you, is you get in there and you begin to love on them. And at a time when maybe they say something to you or they do something to you that's hurtful or they do something to someone else that's hurtful, because it's just one of those things where hurt people, and they're in the process of doing that. Instead of getting bitter and responding and retaliating, when you're in the cage with them, you forgive them. You say, hey, you know, that really hurt, and I don't appreciate when you treat me that way, but I'm going to forgive you because, you know, that's what we do. And you take a little step into helping them see what it means to forgive and to be forgiven. You know, maybe there's somebody close to you that's struggling with pride or dealing with religion. And even in your relationship, they're always crossing every T. They're always dotting every I. They're constantly keeping the plate spinning. They're always concerned with not letting anybody down. You might have a conversation with them. They call you back later to make sure that you didn't take what they said the wrong way, because they're always worried about keeping everything going. And so in that relationship, you know, their biggest fear is dropping the ball and letting someone down. And there's going to be a moment where that's going to happen. And I'm going to be honest with you, it's going to be hard for him. And the reason I know that is because it's hard for me. This is one of the things I struggle with. I struggle when I let people down around me. And if there's somebody in your life, when you get into the cage with them in this scenario, and they let you down, all you can do is just be graceful with them and say, you know, I don't love you because of how well you do or how much you perform or the fact that you always come through. I just love you for being you. That's how you get in the cage with somebody that struggles with pride and religion. Or maybe there's somebody in your life and you're like, man, they just struggle with fear and they need somebody to come in and help them get through this thing. Well, you know, if you know somebody that struggles with fear, then you need to understand something about them. You need to understand that they have a great deal of faith, but their faith is not in things that produce passion or joy or freedom. It's a faith in the belief that tomorrow something bad is going to happen. And so every day in their life, they live, they don't live, they don't do certain things because they're afraid that something bad's going to happen. And so they constantly miss experiences or don't go and be the person God designed them to be because they're afraid of failing. And so the way you get into the cage with them is you come alongside and you be their rabbit. You go alongside and say, hey, I'm going to walk with you on this dream that you have, on this thing that maybe you need to break through, and I'm going to go ahead of you. I'm going to champion your freedom. I'm going to come walk alongside. In fact, I'm going to walk a little bit ahead of you so you can see that there's somebody that's on this journey with you and you don't have to be afraid. I mean, this is what happens. If you want to be a freedom fighter, you have to get in the cage in practical ways. And what happens when we actually do that is sometimes it's not real welcomed. But eventually, we're taken out and we're encaged. And you know, when we're encaged, when we begin to realize that helping someone else go through a freedom experience, we actually begin to realize that I get free myself. In fact, this bird is me. I mean, when I on a regular basis champion someone's freedom, I begin to realize that I'm just increasingly more free. And I help people fly. And sometimes they don't fly very well. And then there's times where they just take off and go. You know, there's something powerful when you get into someone's cage and you begin to help them experience freedom, and you shut the door. You say, we're not going back there. What do you think? Who's that person in my life this week? Who's the person this week whose cage you're feeling called to enter? I mean, there's got to be somebody in your life, somebody that's maybe been on this journey with you, somebody that's not on this journey. Who's that person that you need to just, in a practical, intentional way, make an effort to get into their cage this week? You know, and for some of us, we probably need to think about our own cage, and maybe, you know, maybe we're that one who's just pushing and saying, you know, get out of here. I want to stay in this cage. Who's the person who may be prodding at your life and that you need to allow to come in? And maybe there's some of us who we've never allowed ourselves to receive from the one who ultimately champions our freedom, from the freedom giver Christ. We've never taken that step to receive from him and enter into a relationship where he will begin championing our freedom. And if that's where you are, if you're just in this cage, you're like, man, I need God to just meet me there, and there's nothing I can do to free myself, but I need him to come open the door and begin to set me free, then maybe that's a step you need to take today. Let's bow our heads and take a moment and pray. God, as I'm praying right now, I realize that, you know, we've been talking about this journey, about us becoming free, and yet today, God, we've taken a turn, and we're talking about how we can free others. And so, God, there's probably faces that have come to our mind. There's probably people that have been going across the screen in our mind as we've been going through this morning, people who are not free. And God, I want to ask that you would just reveal someone, that you'd put someone on our hearts this week, that you would help us to give us a practical way that we can become a part of their life, that we can champion their freedom this week. Maybe we can make an appointment, have coffee with them or have lunch with them and be a freedom fighter for them. And God, for some of us, we're still in this cage. And so today is maybe one where we invite you to come and to begin to set us free. If that's where you are, if you're just saying, man, I need this one to come and to begin to champion my freedom, then in your own words, just invite Jesus to do that. Just say, you know, Jesus, I need you to enter my cage. I need you to give to me. I need to receive from you. I realize there's nothing I can do to open that gate myself. I need you to start building into me. I need you to start releasing the tether from the things I'm tied to and allow me to tether to you so that I can begin to be free. And it's not so important how the words come out as much as just the intention of our hearts. If we want to be free, all we can do is receive. As you open up your eyes, I want you to go ahead and take out your connection card. And on the back of them, there's some next steps, and we're always big on helping you take some practical next step toward freedom. And so take a few moments and look over those next steps and identify one. See, this is the step I'm going to take in my freedom journey, and then we're going to sing.